Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 89, Compute Platforms for Virtualization. Let's sort it out. Today my guest is Jeff Schneider. How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing great. How are you, Rick?
Hey, I'm doing well. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us about this topic today, because I'm convinced, Jeff, a lot of people, you know, in the virtualization space, we think so much about storage, and we think a lot about our platform, VMware, Hyper-V, etc. But you know what actually is the center of it all is the server and the compute platform. So Jeff, could you give us a little background of your professional role and what you do?
Sure. My background, basically, I've been in the IT field for 25 years, from creating a how to make PCs useful job for myself when I was in the Navy to being a green screen programmer at State Farm 1 or 2 years ago. Got into network and systems management roles and grew up in that operational side of things for a long time. Became an IT manager at a couple of different startups, and then ran my own company for a little while, and then ended up here at Lenovo in their IT department in the infrastructure management, and then moved over into the product side, and now I'm a technical marketing engineer in the enterprise product group for servers.
Okay. That's a great background, Jeff, and I appreciate that. You know, one question I have, I try to keep up with the brands and the equipment, right? Because in the virtualization space, I spend most of my time there. VMware, Hyper-V, storage. You have to know the components and what's going on. So in regards to Lenovo, right, I know that I use a ThinkPad, right? And I know that the ThinkCenter is the desktop, but also the ThinkServer is the enterprise compute platform. If I remember right, didn't that used to be owned by IBM and then it divested it? What's the history there?
Well, Lenovo in 2005 purchased the IBM PC division. ThinkServers are brand new to Lenovo. I shouldn't say brand new. We've been doing it for a little while. But essentially, we didn't purchase this from anybody. This is Lenovo's own creation.
There you go. Now I know something I didn't know. Okay. Well, that really helps, because, you know, it's tough to keep up with brands and speeds and feeds, right? And especially in my case, I have, you know, spent most of my time on the server side. And then I got kind of, you know, confused because, you know, IBM still has their X servers or something like that. But let's talk about the Think servers, right? So, you know, everybody has to make a server decision. What kind of things, you know, over the years have changed on the compute platform, and specifically enterprise servers? What kind of things have changed over the years, you know, that are things that people need to look for that are different than just how much memory, what type of processor? What kind of things should people look for when deciding on a compute platform?
Well, you know, one of the things that changed it more recently as we started getting in multi-core and things like that is you're right. I mean, it comes down to a lot of speeds and feeds, how much memory, how much processor, that type of thing. But one of the things people need to start looking at now, in particular with virtualization, is what are my ratios? How much memory do I have per core? How much storage do I have per core? Because you're going to come back to cores being essentially how many VMs you can run, how much processing power you can have, and then it comes down to how much memory, how many other resources you have available for each of those virtual machines. So that's one area. You know, and a lot of other things have changed. You do have true parallel processing, true multi-threading, true multi-core availability now that you didn't have before.
In regards to, you know, those decisions, very much cores, capabilities, speeds and feeds, space, right? Maybe I have only, you know, I have to make a 1U decision, right? I'm sure that's a factor for some people. But when it comes to virtualization, is there any, like, oversight that you think somebody may be missing out on when they make a compute platform decision today?
So, you know, one of the things we talked about is, in terms of speeds and feeds, is the memories and cores. But you also want to look at things like manageability. When it comes right down to it, even in a virtualized environment, we still have to fall back on the fundamentals. So, you know, in an IT department overall, what's it take to manage this? How many resources do I have to spend? Does my compute platform, is it a locked-in type of compute platform, or does it support more open standards where I can integrate it into my existing management platform? Does does it offer additional tools? How about power management? How about out-of-band management? Those types of capabilities are really important to the overall infrastructure. Not everything today will be in your virtualization management platform, like VMware or Hyper-V. And as time goes on, server manufacturers are always adding new capabilities, and the management platforms will be playing catch-up. So you want to make sure that when you bring something in new that has a new capability, that what you're already using today is going to be able to manage that. Otherwise, you start getting back into that swivel chair management where you have 12 monitors up and you're moving back and forth to try to manage your infrastructure environment.
Oh, absolutely. I see that as a huge challenge. I'm guilty of this also, right? If my objective is to run some virtual machines and then I need to install something like VMware or Hyper-V, right? I grab a disk, drop it in, and I might get the hypervisor running in either case, and then I'm running my VMs, and then I really haven't set up that framework. What kind of specific examples in terms of management do you think are good decisions today for especially the hardware management side? With that being said, I know that the hardware OEMs know their hardware better than the hypervisors, right? So in VMware, we have this thing called SIM smash data. It's good, but it's not great. What kind of options are available today?
Well, you've got a lot of things like your standard BMC interfaces, IPMI interfaces. You've got things like I mentioned earlier, power management, like Lenovo has Smart Grid, for instance, that allows you to manage the power consumption of an entire rack. Those are the type of tools that will help with managing your infrastructure and saving cost in the long run.
Now, power management, you know, that's actually a topic near and dear to my heart. So I'll tell you a quick story here. I actually stumped a couple of people at VMworld on one of those Ask the Expert things because I'm actually using VMware's distributed power management probably more aggressively than anyone I know. And that's specifically because I don't have enough air conditioning in my room, my computer room. And so, yeah, hey, real problems, right? It is officially a lab, but I treat it like production in the sense of, you know, as a blogger, I use it for my content. In my professional role, we have a kind of a support team that uses it. But I'm using VMware's distributed power management, right? Which, simply put, it will evacuate a host and power it off. And that's at the vSphere. That's a DRS feature. I don't know if anything equivalent is available in Hyper-V. You know, I like the idea of, you know, lowering my thermal output, but is there something in the middle, like, that the hardware can do for me, like slow it down but not power it off? What kind of specific power management techniques are available from hardware platforms today?
So some of the things that are available are, there's technology that will, and forgive me for not knowing the name off the top of my head, but essentially, if cores aren't being used, it'll turn them off.
So is that like a core parking? I think the parking is the term. Is that what it does?
That sounds about right.
Yeah.
So it says, okay, it's still here, it's still waiting for you, but I'm not going to use up any resources with it until you need it. So intelligence just built right into the chip.
Now, that's awesome, because if I follow you right, let's say you, and it's selective, so let's just say there's 12 cores on one socket node. You could park a few of them, and that will dramatically lower your power. But the system, the operating system, is still powered on. Is that right?
Correct.
Oh, that's
it's still
awesome.
Running, and it doesn't really know any difference.
Because the one thing I didn't like about VMware's feature is it's a management nightmare. Because any effective management technique is always out of band. And what I mean by that is you can't let the system that administers, manages, and runs something also be responsible for managing it. Because if there's a failure at the top, it knocks both of those out. So the one kind of knock a lot of people have held off on using something like DPM, at least that's a VMware example in production, because then it's like you're going to get false alerts of a host being down, right? Because it's literally powered off. It's not like it's core parked, materially evacuating its workload. It's off. And it's actually kind of cool, but it doesn't really work for the enterprise. So I actually like the idea of core parking, which I know that would actually work. That would be a really good use case in the Hyper-V side. Because honestly, Windows in this area may have some opportunities for flexibility. And then, of course, Hyper-V, that would actually maybe let me use that type of stuff. I use both, right? I don't have a preference on hypervisors. I arguably know VMware a tad bit more. But, no, I love them both. Virtualization lover, both sides. So that actually...
Let me add in one more.
Yeah, sure, please.
I'm sorry. I was going to say, let me add in one more thing here. That ability to turn down the cores is one approach for it. Lenovo actually has another approach. I mentioned the smart grid earlier, where we actually slow the clock down on the processor.
What?
So what happens is it still is running, but because it's not being utilized as much, it's not going to use as much power.
So the frequency
still thinks everything's the same.
So is it virtually slowing down the gigahertz then?
Correct.
So if the measure, gigahertz is a measure of time, so by slowing down the system clock, you will actually take a, let's just say it's a 4-3 gigahertz processor, you could make it run at a lower frequency that way. Is that effectively what happens?
That's effectively what happens, and that uses less power. The operating system still thinks everything is the same way as it was, and you have the ability then to manage across the rack based on the load on the system what actual resources you need to put towards it in terms of power.
Now, if we slow down the system clock, let's assume that production workloads are still going to be on there. Will timestamps and logs become all messed up?
No, they won't. Everything works exactly the same as it does normally.
So I'll figure that out on my own, but that's really cool. I worry about, there's an academic debate out there in the community of having guest virtual machines sync their time with the host. And if they it sounds like the host will actually maintain the correct time in regards to the operating system. Is this like a separate clock that, would be something where the processors and components would use, or is it the clock for the system?
I actually don't think it has anything to do with the actual time clock. It's just the frequency of the processor that's running.
Gotcha. So, is this smart grid controlling a processor feature then? Is that maybe a better?
That's correct.
Okay, yeah. Got it. So, I bet that there's something there, right? Because I just at first glance it's like, whoa, I don't want to be messing up my. I have enough time issues with virtualization. I don't need another one. But as long as it's, transparent to the operating system, that's an incredible feature. Yeah. Cool. Because
It's basically the same thing as if you were running a 3.0 gigahertz processor or 2.4 gigahertz processor. The operating system still maintains the right time.
Got it. That's good stuff. Now, and that's actually what we need today. We need opportunities to go a little bit out of band, right? There's not one approach for something like power management that'll work for everyone. So we need options. Could be using these technologies and maybe something like a platform capability. So that's good to know that those are out there. So Jeff, my next question is, it really comes down to when things go wrong, right? So let's talk a little bit about serviceability and out-of-band support. So serviceability, I think, is very important in out-of-band support, for that matter, in virtualization, because the impact is so much greater. And you know, you brought up ratios earlier. In my environment, I think I'm running like 30 or so to 1. You know, if something goes wrong on the compute platform, I have 30 or more different people looking at me with you know, not the same smile that they had in the morning. So what kind of design elements do you think make a big difference in regard to serviceability today?
Well, as you were mentioning, out-of-band is huge, right? So, like, the ability to have IKVM capabilities so you can actually reach out and touch the machine from anywhere in the world is a huge factor there. Other design elements, I mean, that's one of the things that virtualization overall has brought to us is the ability to make these production servers portable, right? This piece of hardware goes down. Depending on how you set up your environment, you'll either be bringing it up on another server or it already picked up because you're running fault tolerance. That's huge in terms of uptime. We all recognize that, I think, in terms of virtualization now. I guess the thing that I'm most interested in with my background as an IT manager is, okay, I've kept everything up. You know, first rule of serviceability here or providing a service is if you have a failure, recover service. Okay, I was running fault tolerance on that key production server. It picked up and ran, and VMware's off creating the next backup copy of it, so to return fault tolerance. But now I'm down to the point where I don't have enough hosts unless you're in an environment where you've got an unlimited budget, and I've never run into one of those, but I keep hoping. I no longer have the capabilities to lose another machine. So I need to bring that first host back up and running again as quickly as possible. And that's where, in my mind, you start seeing the differences between a tier one provider and a white box provider, where, okay, that host is down. I call the support line. Somebody's going to answer the phone. Depending on the service contract I purchased based on my requirements, I can have parts here in as few as 4 hours. Whereas, you know, if you've got the guy down the street built you some white boxes, he might not even answer the phone. He might be out to dinner right then. So those are the types of things that I look at as the full life cycle of a incident, right? Identify the incident, recover service, find root cause, and return the environment to where it was to start with. So having a tier one provider as a partner in that process to help you come back up as soon as possible is a key part of it. You know, and if you want to extend further into the life cycle management of your server farm, things like long-term roadmaps where I know I'm going to be able to get the same server for a period of time so it matches, because everybody knows that in virtualization world, if you have identical servers up the stack or up your rack there, everything's going to move a little bit easier. VMotion's a little bit easier to deal with, and the same thing for if you're running Hyper-V. You know, you've got known quantities. So not only being able to buy that same server in the same configuration for a time period, but also knowing you're going to be able to get parts for that for the next X number of years that you bought the service contract for, is another key in that whole lifecycle management of your server farm.
I think that's very important. Especially in a production capacity, I just think that, you know, virtualization abstracts things, but, you know, you still need a place to run this stuff and restore it to. and you need to know what you're getting into. So I think those are all very important points. I hope the listeners have, you know, kind of opened their eyes to some of the, you know, things that go into a compute platform decision. Because honestly, there's so much noise around storage these days and, you know, all these other things. But, you know, it all starts right here. So I think these are all very important points. So Jeff, actually, this is my official gimmick on the podcast, and I hope you were warned. But I do have three questions for you as a person, as a technologist. And these questions are actually set at three different points in time. One in the past, one in the current, and one looking into the future. These are your own kind of best stories or opinions. And I'm going to start in the past. It's basically you as a technologist. What's the most interesting role, story, or something that may have happened to you technology-wise in your professional career?
I think the most interesting role overall has been back in State Farm when I moved from programming into operations. I actually was put in charge of rolling out a network and systems management platform for a small project. They decided to put NT servers in every agent's office, and that was about 17,000 of them. So
we had
to come up with a system from managing and monitoring 17,000 frame relay circuits and 17,000 NT servers in a year.
Wow. You know, it was harder then.
1999.
Yeah. I feel that. Wow. How about today? What gives you the most passion, you know, for what you do technology-wise, or what area of technology are you most interested in, or what's pretty cool today for you?
Well, I'm lucky right now in the role I've got as a technical marketing engineer that we're looking at a lot of different things from a lot of different partners and a lot of different technologies that we're going to be deploying. And my role right now is essentially to take our servers, the products from our partners, and come up with solutions that IT departments need. And to me right now, I'm passionate about the fact that I get to go find out something new every day about this world of virtualization, of storage, of, you know, our own products as we come out and add new features. To me, that's what keeps me going in the morning, that, hey, I'm going to go learn something new today.
I love it. That's much much like me, actually. I totally get that. I like to say that no 2 days are the same with the Rickatron. So, Jeff, looking into the future, what, you know, just generally predictive or maybe that we are aware of technology-wise, what are you most excited for technology-wise into the future?
You know, and it's hard for me to get specific about technology because the thing that actually excites me the most is the fact that I have no idea what the next great thing is going to be. And I look at it and I find things, you know, I'm looking online and I see things like, well, we may be changing the architecture of computers by using quantum tunneling instead of transistors. It's like, okay, yeah, in my world, never would have predicted that, never would have thought of it, have no frame of reference to, you know, really even understand what that means to start with. That's the interesting thing about technology today. You know, 5 or 10 years ago, who'd have predicted that social media was a thing that changed everything?
Absolutely,
right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm also actually really interested in the things we learn as we start moving into the area of big data. That's one thing that, you know, as we move forward, maybe not the technology of big data itself, but the things that we're going to learn when we start putting all that raw data together and finding out what we can learn from it.
No, that's great insight into the future, because it's really tough to really make, you know, that third question is always the hardest for my guests. Some of them, you know, the predictions are actually quite interesting. So, hey, Jeff, I really appreciate you taking the time to be on the podcast here. And I'm going to have a couple of links in the podcast notes, one of which will be to the ThinkServer blog, which I found that at blog.lenovo.com, and it, the categorical post for ThinkServer. I've got a page for that, as well as Lenovo's on Twitter, at Lenovo. I can encourage you to get on Twitter yourself, by the way, but hey, I'll let you off the hook this time. So hey, Jeff, I really appreciate you being on the show.
Really appreciate you having me on.